Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractor's Business Tape CD of the Month. This monthly cassette CD series represents yet another step in accomplishing Granting Associates' vision of teaching contractors how to run profitable companies. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. This month's presentation will cover a topic we've never presented. This topic involves lots and lots of your money and plays havoc with your cash flow. Unfortunately, it's largely overlooked in most companies, but potentially is costing contractors thousands and thousands of dollars each year. Yes, it's a bit boring in terms of subject matter, but handling it properly can add a huge amount of money to your bottom line profitability. What am I talking about? I'm talking about your inventory. This month, Joe Hodes, president and owner of the Hodes Company, is going to share some very valuable information on how to achieve a controlled and balanced inventory. Joe has 17 years experience managing inventory control. He is an ISO quality system certified manufacturer, assembler, and distributor of plumbing repair products, and is a graduate of Gordon Graham School of Inventory Management. Joe is also the founder, creator of an inventory control program called Stock Service System for service repair contractors. If you want to learn how to manage your inventory, Joe's the man to listen to. Now let's take some time out of your busy day and learn yet another way to increase your bottom line profit.
Sharing a round of golf with friends, fishing with your kids, reading a book on the beach, or simply going for a stroll in the park, or spending that same time in a hot and muggy, dusty, dirty back room or service truck trying to find out where a product is you know you just saw last week, and all the while wondering where all your cash has gone lately and why your techs are spending their days driving around town tracking down parts and then yakking it up at the local supply house. And if you had enough time, you'd get your inventory in order, all the while knowing that the reason you don't have time to get your inventory in order is precisely why you don't have the time. Knowing you need to do something and knowing what to do are two different things, and my goal in this relatively short amount of time is to provide you with just some of the basics of what you can do to improve your inventory control without spending very much money, if any at all. Now, all of us take action for different reasons, and it's usually a realization that if you keep doing the same things that you did before, you can continue to reap the same consequences. Why are you in business? There are two reasons: the money or the glory. Our company has seen many changes over the last 60 plus years. It used to be very common for management to never seem quite satisfied unless there was a lot of activity in the office or warehouse of our family-owned assembly and plumbing distributorship. People screaming into phones, running out to the warehouse, walking on the proverbial eggshells. Back one day in 1989, I watched as one of our managers laid into one of our order fillers because she didn't look busy. I saw many times where people would pick up a pen or product, furrow their eyebrows, and look busy. The general atmosphere at work then was, when in doubt, run in circles and scream and shout. Oftentimes, activity was confused with productivity. Managers received a lot of satisfaction solving continual crisis, often created by bad inventory control, in Superman-like fashion and going home dead tired after a long day at work. We were in business for the glory. It was back on June 1, 1993, on my very first day of ownership, that I announced to everyone in our first ever company-wide meeting that we deserved the cleanest, most organized, and efficient assembly and distribution warehouse in which to spend a large part of our working lives, and my responsibility was to either provide that to them or help them find another company that did. It was the quality of our people that has driven me to provide that environment, and I am hopeful that if you aren't already building for your employees and community now, that you hear that call and start today. Whether you're an HVAC, plumbing, or electrical service company, you need products to help you do the job. Achieving effective inventory management is one of the pieces of the puzzle that will allow you the freedom you need to achieve your lifelong goals. It's a means to an end. The ability to turn cash into inventory, as we all have learned, is easy. The challenge is turning that inventory back into cash, and that is what I'd like to hopefully get you thinking about, and, better yet, acting on, so you can find yourself on that beach, in that park, or on that lake or golf course as a result of the small time you're now committing to learn about some keys to achieving a controlled and balanced inventory. First things first, do all of your employees understand the cost of bad inventory management? Do all of your employees pick up items laying on the floor and put them in its proper place? Do they pretend not to see it? Do they feel they are too busy to deal with it? Do they kick it out of the way? The answer to this question provides a good indicator of what your employees think about your inventory. For any company to be successful, its employees have to see the direct relationship between inventory and their paycheck. The same pile of money that is used to pay employees is used to buy inventory. Furthermore, inventory must be transformed back into cash through sales for the company to have the money to pay its employees in the future. You cannot be successful or perhaps even survive unless all of your employees understand this relationship. You can see if they understand this concept by giving them a little test. Let them consider the following scenario. Jerry is one of your service techs. He's never been what you would call neat. His motto is, serve the customer quick and don't let anything get in your way. Jerry doesn't think twice about flinging boxes out of the way to get to the item he wants. The path of destruction he leaves in his wake earned Jerry the well-earned nickname, the Tornado. It's probably not surprising that Jerry occasionally, once a week or so, breaks something. And it probably won't shock you to learn that some of the material that Jerry flings out of the way is never seen again. In fact, Jerry loses or breaks $100 worth of material each week. What does the company have to do to make up for this loss? Many people would respond that the company would have to sell an additional $100 worth of material and that the $100 cost may be worth the service Jerry provides the customers. This is incorrect. Like any other expense, material losses, whether from theft, breakage, or misplacing stock, must be paid for with net profit dollars. These profits are the company's source of income. In other words, the money it has left over after it pays all of its expenses. If a company's net profit before taxes is 4%, a very respectable number, the organization has a 4-penny profit for every dollar of sales. The replacement material has to be paid for out of these 4 cents on the dollar. Therefore, to make up for Jerry's mistakes, the company doesn't need $100 in new sales, it needs $2,500. 4% of $2,500 is $100. This same example applies to missing or stolen material, broken or damaged stock, and obsolete products. Any product purchased and not eventually sold to a customer has a huge negative effect and is compounded by the percentage of profit a business makes. For example, if the business only makes 2% profit, then the unsold material really means the company must make $5,000 in new sales to make up for the $100 damaged product from Jerry. Most of the time, once an owner understands the real cost of lost and damaged material, many business owners reach for that heartburn medicine. This example doesn't even take into account the related costs incurred when inventory is lost. Additional expenses incurred ordering emergency shipments and fighting fires, labor is wasted searching for missing material in the warehouse, and disappointed customers are promised material that is thought to exist in the bin but cannot be found. You cannot hold your specific people responsible for the material in your shop if it is open to everyone. Only the people receiving, moving, and picking material should be allowed access to your inventory. After all, do you think your bank allows everyone to wander around their vault? Okay, hopefully you have an appreciation of the cost of lost and damaged material. Unfortunately, there is another reason material disappears: theft. Many business owners find it hard to believe that their employees would steal. But unfortunately, stealing, especially petty theft, is a very common reason for inventory shrinkage. And an owner who doesn't admit that theft is a problem is burying their head in the sand. As was stressed before, employees must see all inventory shrinkage as an expense that reduces the amount of money available to pay wages and benefits. It takes money out of their pockets. I have visited hundreds of service shops over the years, and I can tell you something without a doubt. I have never visited a filthy shop that had achieved effective inventory control. In fact, the most disorganized the shop, the higher the cost of doing business. Why? Cluttered floors impair the movement of people and material. Material not put away properly is subject to loss and breakage. Customers tend to refuse dirty material or products that arrive in damaged packages or scratched. Scavenger hunts to find missing material waste lots of time. Demonstrate to your employees how you feel about your inventory investment. Clean up your warehouse and keep it neat and tidy. Assign people who have a good knowledge of your products the job of receiving material and putting away stock. Many companies put new employees in receiving. These people may have good intentions and be eager, but they don't know the product, or they might be afraid to ask, so they'll stash them someplace they can't identify. After all, out of sight, out of mind. How often have you heard someone say something like, "Yeah, I saw those RP-983s come in. They were right over there. I know we have them, but I've searched everywhere and I can't find them." Have the new people pick the orders. It's a great way for them to learn the products, and the techs can check their accuracy. The first part of our goal of effective inventory control is to meet or exceed your customers' expectations of product availability. When you stock a product, you are making a commitment to have that item available in reasonable quantities. But we have found that most shops not only have material intentionally stocked, but also quite a bit of what we call fish inventory, meaning first in, still here, which is stuff accumulated over time that has become stuck in your inventory. Often you are not sure who ordered it, or as we often hear, it was an ex-employee's decision to bring it in, or why it's there. Establish a definitive list of the products you will stock in your shop and in your trucks. By placing an item on the list, you are committing to stock the product. The commitment does not necessarily mean that some of the items are always on the shelf. For example, seasonal products may be in stock for only part of the year, but stocked items should normally be in your truck or shop when your customers want them. A management-approved stock list controls the introduction of new items into your inventory. Consider this situation. A customer has an uncommon fixture that needs to be repaired. The service tech needs 4 of a certain repair part, but the supplier only sells them in lots of 12. The part costs $25 a piece, and the tech charges the customer $32.50, which is a 30% markup, for the 4 pieces needed. After the job, the 8 pieces that aren't used are stashed somewhere on his truck or back at the shop. Yes, there is a possibility that these 8 pieces will sell at a later date, assuming they can be found, but there is a better chance that those 8 pieces will be around when you take your physical inventory and the next inventory and so on and so on. The tech earned money on the sale that produced a gross profit of $30, which is the $7.50 gross profit times the 4 pieces, but in making the sale has added $200, $25 times the 8 remaining pieces, of dead stock to the inventory. What's wrong with this picture? Well, the tech had the ability to add the item to the stocked inventory. You might argue that this is a non-stock or special order item, but some of the product remained on the truck or in the shop after the sale to the customer was completed. A few ways we've seen companies solve this dilemma is to either charge the customer for all 12 of the products, charge the tech for the unused quantity by the customer, or consider the cost of the remaining special order product as a cost of doing business. Use ranking by hits to separate stock from stuff. About 100 years ago, an Italian economist, Vilfredo Pareto, conducted some research on income distribution in Italy. He found that 80% of the income was earned by 20% of the people. You may find this interesting, but wonder still the same what this has to do with separating your stock from your stuff. Well, other folks later applied that concept and found that generally, 80% of the results of any process are produced by 20% of the contributing factors. As a result, the 80-20 rule was established. This suggests that 80% of your sales are generated by 20% of your service techs, 80% of your sales come from 20% of your customers, and 80% of your usage hits comes from 20% of your stocking inventory items. But this rule is not always true. In fact, we have found that many companies, including our own, find that 80% of the product usage is only generated by 10 or 15% of the stocked inventory items. Don't assume the 80-20 rule applies to your business. You can greatly simplify your life and make your business so much more efficient by identifying just those 10% of products that make up 80% of your usage and focus on them while setting up an efficient system to take care of all the others, so they don't sap undeserved time and energy from the products that will greatly affect your success. By identifying the top 10% of your products by number of times it's used on a job, which means a small and expensive fitting may be an A item, while a large expensive fixture may be a B or even a C-class item, you will greatly reduce the amount of times you run out of critical items, and you will actually be able to cut your dollar investment in inventory down because you will be watching those items more often and therefore placing smaller orders more often to keep your cash moving. We have found that unless you create a system for adding new products, things can get out of hand in a hurry. Although you never want to stifle being on the front end of a great new product that can set you apart and create new opportunities for profit, one person should be in charge of approving all new additions. Successful businesses realize that adding new items is an investment that should be considered carefully and have a new product questionnaire that asks questions such as, what customers will buy this product? What are the sales projections for each of the first 6 months after introduction? What information is being used as the basis for these projections? What effect will sales of this product have on the usage of existing products? Assign and use bin locations. A bin location is a designated storage space for an item. Why are bin locations important? Consider this example. Your service tech is on a job and is in need of a particular product. He goes to your truck and after 30 minutes of searching, I know I just saw that somewhere in here yesterday, he finally gives up and calls the shop to ask if someone can deliver the product to the site. Now back at the shop, the similar searching occurs whereby the product cannot be located because it's not in the three or four places that it could be, all the while costs are being incurred due to the tech being idle, the homeowner getting peeved all the while that product is hiding both on the truck and back in the shop. Even if you eventually find the material, but it takes you lots of time, therefore money, by not having the designated place for that item. Fixed bins are used for products that you always want to store in the same location. Even when you are out of stock on the item, it's a fixed bin and remains empty. Random bins are not reserved for a single item. Random bins are normally located in bulk storage, and as soon as the item quantity held in the random bin is exhausted, the random bin becomes available for any other item. Holding bins are used to store any inventory that is not currently available for sale. For example, you may have a job and are waiting on other products to complete that job, or have items waiting to be returned to a supplier or to be inspected. Carefully develop a meaningful numbering system for your trucks and shop. Make sure you allow for some unused numbers between current products and between each storage unit to allow for additional stocking product. Are your trucks in your shop filled with air? Take an objective look at your trucks and shop. Is there a significant amount of space between the shelves? There are many types of storage bins that will help create an efficient space, and you will be truly amazed at the amount of products that can be stored that will both save time in picking the items from the bins and save you from possibly outgrowing or having to purchase or rent space. I would guess that 75% of you currently could stock your needed inventory in at least half the space you currently use. Most folks spend a lot more time deciding what to buy than where to put it once it arrives. The result of this lack of planning can be lost or broken merchandise in a cluttered truck or shop. Most successful people know exactly where a product will go once it arrives at the door. They take great care and planning on ensuring an adequate space for each stock item. As you decide how to allocate your available space, it's good to keep a few things in mind. The bin space should be enough to fit the maximum quantity you have budgeted to stock of that item. Does the item need to take up a complete face location where it can be seen from the front of the bin? Or is it a slower moving item that can be stored in a tray with dividers in back of other products? This concept can help free up more space. If an item is large and very popular, does it make sense to keep a couple of days' usage in a prime location and the balance of the stock in a bulk storage location? This can also free up valuable space needed for other popular products. Barcoding improves accuracy. You can spend a lot of time arranging products in your truck or shop to maximize the productivity of your people, But how can you prevent inaccuracies of your people writing indecipherable descriptions, mixed up product numbers, and becoming drowned in paperwork? The answer is barcoding. You might think it would be impossible to put a barcode label on every piece of every item you stock. You don't have to. Many companies utilize the power of barcodes by placing these labels on bin locations instead of individual products. Time savings by having the minimum and maximum quantities plus the item description and recommended purchase quantity for that particular item at your fingertips while you're at the bin location will pay for the cost of the barcode scanner and labels in a very short time and provide you a quick and easy solution when the usage for that item inevitably changes. Many of the more progressive suppliers today have barcoded inventory control programs that are much more inexpensive than you might imagine. Look around any international airport today at the signage and you will find that instead of using words on signs, there are pictures. For example, there is not a sign showing the word exit. There is a picture of a person walking through a door. Why is this? Because we don't all speak the same language. As you probably already know, even inside the trade, one service tech may call a fitting a nipple, another a pipe extender, and another might be in a fog and the words not come to his mind. Like the saying goes, a picture is worth a thousand words. Although having bin labels and product labels with a synchronized numbering system is better than nothing, many of the most successful companies realize the edge an illustration can provide in saving time and aggravation. So why not go the extra step in making sure that each of your bin locations and product labels have a picture of what is enclosed? Record all material leaving your warehouse. Remember that your inventory is cash. Do you think your bank allows their employees to take samples out of the vault without tracking it? All successful companies should have the following written in large capital letters in a prominent place near their inventory and on all trucks. No material leaves this area without being checked out. Violators of this policy either do not understand that they are taking money out of their own pockets or they are deliberately trying to hurt the company. The decision is yours. There are many different ways to track items leaving the bin, including barcoding, setting each tech with an account code, writing it down on paper, etc. But it should be both thorough and easy to understand, but it should always be clearly understood by all how important it is to track what is leaving the bin. Cycle count your products. Unfortunately, most companies only verify their stock balances once a year at best, and this only leads to stock outages or overstock situations that become so old nothing can be done about it. For a typical service company, it should not be unreasonable to have each bin organized and counted at a minimum twice a year for slow movers and maximum 50 times for the most popular items. Let's say you stock 1,000 items. Let's say the 80-20 rule applies. Again, this is conservative because it's usually the 80-10 rule. And there are 200 items that make up 80% of the usage hits, meaning number of times that item is pulled from the bin. Hopefully those 200 items are visibly separated from the rest, and your stock person would be spending the large majority of time making sure those products are in good order. If that person looked over 40 of those items each day while they were having their morning coffee, for example, to make sure they were in stock, the correct item was in the bin and there wasn't any overstock that had to be dealt with immediately, each of those 200 items would be looked at once a week throughout the year. For the other 800 items, that person may want to only visit that bin when one of those items had been pulled the previous day, and in that case, the count frequency of that item would depend on its usage throughout the year. Again, time is spent on those items worthy of it and no more. Stock receipts should be put away ASAP. When items have been purchased, it should be assumed that they are in-demand products that most likely will be needed again very soon. Having boxes sitting on the floor after the product has hit your door is practically ensuring that time will be wasted locating those products, or worse yet, having the tech drive around town when the item is sitting on your floor already purchased. Material lying around tends to break more often than stock that is put away properly. Products not placed immediately in their protected bin tends to get kicked or stepped on, creating an even bigger issue than being out of stock on it, because then it's again more money out of your pocket. It can disappear. Isn't it funny how products that are ordered and shown to be shipped in your location sometimes mysteriously become lost in transit, only to become found again later on in the year in some other bin location? I don't mean to beat a dead horse here, but put the product away the same day it hits your door. Same goes for defective material. This is money out of your pocket, and every day you put off returning defective product for credit is not only costing you money, but the likelihood of that product being thrown away or lost increases. The customer service level measures how often you have the items you've committed to stock when your customers want them. Keep in mind that every time you don't have what your customers want, you either have to go get them or your customer starts to seek out competitors. What response would you get when asking your employees what inventory turnover means? A blank expression? A grunt? By saying, "I don't know"? By saying, "It's our opportunity to make a profit"? If you hear that last answer, then you are a very good business person, because that is exactly how inventory turnover should be thought of, an opportunity to earn a profit. The concept is best illustrated by using an example. Say you sell $10,000 worth of product at cost over the course of a year and receive total revenue from those sales of $12,500. If you bought the entire $10,000 worth of product on January 1st, at the end of 12 months, you would have made a return of $2,500 on an investment of $10,000. But do you have to buy the entire $10,000 of material at one time? What if you bought just $5,000 worth of the product on January 1st, and then, right before running out of that stock, you bought an additional $5,000 worth of product with part of the revenues received from selling the first shipment? At the end of the year, you'd still have sold $10,000 worth of product, still made $2,500 in gross profit, but would have only had a maximum $5,000 invested in inventory. Could you do the same by buying $2,500 of inventory and buying $2,500 just before you ran out of that, until at the end of the year you would have made an annual $2,500 in gross profit with an investment of only $2,500 at any one time, but done it four times during the year? The better option is obviously investing $2,500 at one time to make the same amount of annual gross profit, and using that other $7,500 that was tied up in inventory on the first example by either buying more profit-producing products or in marketing or other areas of your company. Create a brand for your company. Custom product and bin labeling can do several things to build your company brand, both with your employees and clients. Many of your competitors sell the same products to the same potential service techs to the same potential clients. How can you differentiate yourself from your competition in hiring and retaining the best technicians and clients? Well, you can provide additional services or sell at lower prices, but both of these eat away at your profit margins. Many of the most successful service companies are realizing that they can set themselves apart by using the amount of inventory and quality of the product containers to brand their businesses to their clients. How do they do this? They provide high-quality containers with their company name printed right on them. How can this additional expense save money for your company? Heavy corrugated boxes provide better protection for merchandise, especially when it's traveling on a truck. Custom-labeled products and packaging is cheap and effective advertising. What feeling does your client have when they notice the products with your company name and logo on them? What feeling does your service tech have? Confidence, responsibility, establishment. Determining and using minimum and maximum order quantities are what we found to be the best way for service companies to manage having the right amount of inventory on hand. The minimum quantity should include the safety stock that you want to have on hand to ensure your customer service, and your maximum quantity should not exceed the bin capacity for that product and should represent the budget of product you are willing to stock at that time. It is important to review these quantities as time passes. For example, if you are constantly running out of a particular item, the minimum-maximum quantity should probably be adjusted. Just the same, when cycle counting the slower moving items and you notice a bin with too much product in it, Adjusting the min-max quantities lower will make sure the next time that product is ordered, the amount ordered is lower. Long lead times are not a problem. Inconsistent ones are. If you know a product consistently takes 4 weeks to get after you order it, you'll know when to order. But if a supplier is shipping product the same day one time and 4 weeks later at other times, what will happen to your customer's service? Your inventory turns. Find out from your suppliers how long it will take to receive material and then use that for your ordering system. Your vendor choices will greatly determine your own internal efficiencies, so take that into consideration when figuring your true cost of inventory. Recognize the total cost of your inventory. If you buy a product for $1 and sell it for $2, you made 100% profit, right? In spite of what some of your employees might believe, a company incurs costs other than what the vendor, and transportation if applicable, when buying and maintaining a product in inventory. These costs can be divided into two categories: the cost of ordering the material and the cost of handling the inventory in your warehouse. If we add these costs to the amount you actually pay for the material, we get the total cost for the material. Reordering cost. Unfortunately, many companies overlook the hidden cost of ordering, and many believe they are buying from the lowest cost supplier when in fact it is costing them much more than buying that product at a higher invoice price but a lower overall cost. You must account for the processing time for the initial purchase order, the expediting time until the product hits your door, and processing the invoice for payment. Total ordering costs include identifying what needs to be ordered, placing the order, fax, phone, or barcode scanner direct, reviewing the vendor confirmation, checking for correct cost and quantities, confirming delivery dates, and receiving the product all the way to the designated bin location. Also included is the processing of payment by accounts payable, creating and mailing a check, and filing the paperwork. Obviously, any inaccurate shipments, defective material, bad quality products, unlabeled products, or questionable invoice pricing will increase the cost to order for that particular service company because of the vendor incompetence. There are formulas available to help compute a company's overall cost to order and for also each vendor to determine whether or not their pricing is indeed the best. The average cost to order for most service companies we found is around $6 for purchase order line. But companies using barcoding and other types of electronic purchasing and payment average around $3, or half the amount that other companies have. Inventory carrying cost. Include such things as warehouse or truck space, taxes, insurance, obsolescence or shrinkage, material handling, and the cost of money, which include opportunity cost, when figuring your total inventory carrying cost. Adding these costs and dividing it by your average inventory value will get you your total cost to carry percentage. For most companies, this amount comes to around 35%, but companies utilizing organized systems that take full advantage of designated bin locations and efficient space utilization often average less than 30%. So back to our example of a $1 purchase and a $2 sell price for an item. The true profit would depend on how many other products and line items would have been purchased along with that part. For example, if that item was the only thing purchased from just that one vendor, the cost to order would have been extremely high. Whereas if it was ordered along with 50 other line items and was one of 500 of that product purchased on that line item, the cost to order and carry would have been much, much lower. So do yourself and your family a favor by bringing your company up to date with effective inventory control solutions that will allow you the peace of mind and money to spend your time on that beach, in that boat, on that golf course, or in that park seeking the greater satisfactions of life.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Feel free to give us a call with your comments, or if you prefer, you may fax or email our office. As a reminder, our 3-day Basic Business Bootcamp continues to help contractors learn how to run profitable businesses. For more information on our ProfitMax software and or our 3-day Basic Business Bootcamps,
Simply call or write Grandy and Associates, or check us out on the web. The address is www.grandyassociates.com. The address is the same as in the past, but the website has been totally redesigned in terms of its content. You can now order online, view boot camp locations, and even sign up for a class online. Take a look as you have time. It might just increase your bottom line profit a bit. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.